This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Buck Joffrey to the show. And you know, you've probably all heard the old saying that doctors, dentists, just another form of doctor, are notoriously bad business people. Well, this one is the opposite. Buck is an accomplished physician, entrepreneur, asset manager, podcaster. He finished medical school in 2008 and had tremendous success through his startup businesses and investments, going from being broke to having an eight-figure net worth in order to help his high-paid professional colleagues, helping those other doctors, being the shepherd for them. Started a financial education website called Wealth Formula, and he hosts the popular Wealth Formula podcast. Buck, welcome. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Jason. I'm good.
My pleasure. Give us a sense of geography. Where are you located?
So I'm in Chicago, in the northern suburbs.
Fantastic. Well, Chicago is certainly a city that doesn't do a very good job managing its money.
No, it is not a good place yet. Yeah, and the weather's not so good right now either. So,
well, there you go. Tell us a little bit about some of your broad philosophical thoughts on wealth creation and some of the things you see affecting people in your profession.
Yeah, so I think, you know, you nailed it right at the beginning when you were talking about how doctors have such a terrible reputation. You know, I spoke to a well-known CPA the other day, and he was telling me about how all these terrible horror doctor stories about investing. And I can't say that it's not true. It is. And there's a reason for it. I think doctors, as a general rule, they have their nose down in the books and they're studying, just like some of the other professionals out there. And they focus, very much on a single discipline over all these years. And the next thing you know, you're in your 30s and you finally, you know, go from being broke to actually having some money and you don't know what to do with it. The second thing is that doctors take something called a Hippocratic Oath. Right. So we believe that when people are doing things for us and they say they're going to do things, that they're actually going to do it. And that they don't have a secondary intention like a wealth advisor might.
Oh, this can be a rude awakening.
Yeah. And then you see that all the time. And you see that whether it's, you know, physicians signing their first contract and getting burned there, or they start getting money and they start getting cold calls from all sorts of people talking about, you know, you should invest in this and invest in that. And everything sounds great. And of course,
yeah. Same thing happens in the world of celebrities. Like, we have a few celebrity clients. Mm-hmm. They've just got people all around them that are these money managers that many times are just ripping them off, you know. And,
right.
And you see it with athletes. I mean, look at the stories you've heard about, like NFL players. And it is amazing to me, Buck. I've taken this funny voyeuristic interest. This is the first time I've talked about this, by the way. Just a little tangent here, because I was doing it last night. Yeah. And I'll sit there watching a movie or watching a TV, you know, watching TV, and I'll be watching the news and I'll see the news anchor and I will Google their net worth and their salary. And it blows my mind. Let me share with you two examples. Megyn Kelly. Okay. Megyn Kelly, now, you know, she only recently started earning a lot of money. She's been doing it for like a whole career, right? But, you know, she's a great news anchor. She was, I know she just made a switch to NBC, but she was making about, I think, $15 million a year or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, now these net worth numbers on these websites, who knows if they're right, right?
Yeah, right.
But it said her net worth was only $15 million. How do you make $15 million a year and have a net worth of only $15 million? But even worse, let me tell you this one. Matt Lauer, Today Show Matt Lauer, okay, $28 million a year. I was shocked at how big his salary was, right?
Yeah.
$28 million bucks a year. But get this, listeners, wait till you hear this. This is shocking. It's appalling. Because Matt Lauer's been doing it a long time, okay? And he's been making money a long, long time, you know, at least a decade and a half, right? That, you know, big, big income. Matt Lauer's net worth, according to the internet, highly reliable, is $60 million. makes $28 million a year and only has a net worth double what he makes in a year.
He wears some nice suits and he's got those haircuts. he doesn't have much hair, right? So, but who knows?
That's just shocking, though, that you wouldn't be like, if I made $28 million a year, trust me, after doing that for a few years, I'd be worth a few $100 million.
Oh,
okay.
Gosh, yeah. Exactly. But the reality is, if you look at the status quo, what you're told to do, what's indoctrined is the correct thing to do after you start earning is not to try to invest it yourself. You're supposed to go to, you know, the expert. The responsible thing to do is supposed to be to go find a nice financial advisor that maybe, you know, your parents used or so on and so forth. And then they put you in a nice set of, you know, stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, and the mutual funds suck off 3.5% right as you invest them, and you get your great, fantastic growth over 10 years of 3% per year at best, you know, and that's the way it goes. And unfortunately, that's the way, unfortunately, most people invest. And I am concerned about my colleagues because I think that a lot of them, even though they make a lot of money, as you suggested, even with the ultra wealthy, but these people might end up dying broke. And that's concerning to me, and I don't like it. And I've made a lot of money in my, you know, in short career, and I'm trying very hard to help my colleagues to do better.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so some of the broad strokes as to your philosophical underpinnings. You alluded to one of them just now, of course, saying don't go to the guy at Merrill Lynch wearing the nice suit who doesn't have any money or maybe has a lot. You know, I'm not sure, but usually they don't. And they're telling you how to invest your money, but they just have really no clue that your software spits out a pretty pie chart, modern portfolio theory. It's crap. It's just crap.
Yeah,
I mean, it's unbelievable what most people do, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's broad strokes. I believe in investing first and foremost for cash flow. If you don't have cash flow, I don't want anything to do with it. I don't invest typically in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. Why? Because I don't really understand how or why they work. And in 2008, it was like $1 trillion of people's wealth vanished over a course of a few days. Real assets, real things don't vanish over a few days. So I don't want to own those types of things. I want to own things that are real or that are tangible, and they don't go away because some bank had a bad day, mm-hmm. right? So those are some very broad strokes. I want things that I understand. And this is something that I think is way underrated, right? Because the thing with the advisors, the wealth advisors, what they like to do is they like to use a lot of lingo to confuse people like me. You know, we're doctors. What do we know? And it's talking about this and this many basis points and that many this and, you know, derivatives. And who knows what they're talking about, right? But you don't want to ask because you want to feel stupid, right?
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, why does something have to be really complex to be? I mean, the best things of anything in life are relatively simple. They hide a lot of fraud, whether it be overt fraud or covert fraud, you know, in complexity.
If you can't show me, you turn a napkin over and you show me how an investment works and how it makes money, if you can't do that, then I don't want to invest in it. It's that simple. And people make that seem like it's some alternative thing. I mean, this has roots in the Kiyosaki sense of real assets too. And they act like this is some alternative concept, but I guarantee you owning things and getting cash flow from things you own is much older than stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. It's been around for a long, long time.
True.
And so I think the thing that we need to do, people like you and people like me, is to try to help unprogram these ideas in people's heads. I mean, I have people who are contacting me who are listening to my podcast at Wealth Formula Podcast and saying, Buck, thanks for saying this because I had a feeling that this was true, but I just felt wrong not doing what everybody was telling me to do, which was, you know, to go to a wealth advisor and invest in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, because it almost seems like some kind of heresy if you don't, that you're doing the irresponsible thing. And I think that there's a reason for that. Wall Street has ingrained that in us.
No, absolutely. Wall Street has just conned like a couple generations of people in terms of how to invest and simple things. Okay, so let's talk about specifically what are those things.
Well, like you, I'm a big fan of real estate. My dad is a landlord. I never wanted to be a landlord, so I'm not. But I am an asset manager, and I own property. So that's one of my favorite things. Single family homes, I don't do. I think it's a great asset class. For me, I wanted to be able to scale a little bit quicker. I'm a business guy by nature, so being able to deploy a little bit more capital quicker and get into apartment buildings was more sort of my style. And the other nice thing about apartment buildings and, you know, developments and real estate and that sort of thing is when they're nice and big, you can let others share in the wealth. So we do syndications and let people come along as limited partners and invest and enjoy a lot of the benefits without any of the liability and a lot of the upside.
You know, one of the things you do that I'm not a fan of is syndications, right? And the reason I'm not a fan, I like the direct investor route, is because you got to relinquish control. And, you know, it's not as bad as relinquishing control to, you know, kind of a Wall Street type scenario, but you still relinquish control. And when you do that, you know, I always say one of my 10 commandments of successful investing, you leave yourself susceptible to three major problems. Number one, you might be investing with a crook. Number two, you might be investing with an idiot. And number three, assuming they're honest and competent, you pass those two hurdles, and that's good news. They take a big management fee off the top for managing the deal. Now, certainly everything I just said applies to any form of pooled investment, whether it be a mutual fund, any Wall Street investment. And, you know, we both dislike Wall Street. And I just will explain that there are so many layers to that onion that I just shared on the Wall Street scenario, because not only do you leave yourself susceptible to either the graft, corruption, stupidity, or greed of the fund manager, like the mutual fund manager, right? But there's a zillion middlemen in there. And then there's the actual companies themselves and their graft, corruption, stupidity, and greed, right? as well. So you've got like multiple layers of this problem. At least with a syndication of an apartment deal, you've only got one layer, hopefully.
Well, listen, and I don't disagree with you, because I think that syndication is ripe with some of the same problems. I mean, you have people who don't want to act ethically and take care of their investors, you know? There are those issues. So, you know, to that point, I say part of investing in private things is investing with people who you, over time, get to know, like, and trust, and maybe you've invested or somebody else has invested with them and done pretty well, et cetera, and so on and so forth. The other thing that you mentioned, which is also true, is that in a syndication, the sponsor, the person who's putting the deal together, is going to take part of the deal. But the reality is this, that not everybody has time to be directly managing their assets. You know, not everybody does. I mean, listen, I've been in the world of neurosurgery and head and neck surgery. I've been on all these things. If you're working like that and you're making a lot of money, the last thing you want is to have to worry about, you know, managing things. And beyond that, you might even be concerned about some of the liability that comes with owning real things. A lot of people want to do real estate because they love the idea of what real estate does for them. But they can't and won't because they don't have the time or the skill set to do so. And that's where I think syndication is great, because you're right. You may not make as much as the syndicator, but you still make 8 to 10% or more per year. You might make 20% IRR in 5 years. I mean, these are very realistic numbers for a syndication, and those are much better than Wall Street. You just have to choose right. I mean, listen, I invest passively with other syndicators, just a handful of people that I trust. And I found that to be the case. I love it, you know, but as a syndicator myself, there is a premium on being able to put the deal together. And I think that the value as somebody who's coming in, especially on the real estate side, is all of the investment. When you invest, you get all of the benefits of a real estate in ownership. In other words, the depreciation, the tax benefits. But then you're a limited partner. So for doctors, for example, like me, that's great, right? You don't have to worry about getting sued, right? But you're enjoying all of the upside. So that's where I think a syndication comes in.
Do you go out and acquire the property yourself, and you've paid an attorney to draft all your syndication documents and all that? I mean, are you actually the guy doing all of that? Because that's a lot of work to get deal flow and to find deals and to negotiate them and manage them, or what is your role exactly?
You know, I do that, and I do things in concert with other investors as well. So my practice as a physician is pretty limited at this point. my primary job is to be as an investor and as an asset manager. So this is what I do, right? So yeah, I think the key things for me right now are deal flow and trying to find things that work, that make sense for my investors, that I feel good about for investors, because I'm very cognizant about that. And I don't want to be just a small version of Wall Street for these people.
Mm-hmm. So you're actually finding the deals and setting them up and doing all of that? I mean,
here's how it works. I operate everything that I do, because I'm a business guy. I've now set up 5 or 6 businesses, and I'm not the day-to-day guy, right? But I'm the CEO and I'm the high-level guy. So what I've done in the real estate side is, in terms of acquiring property, I have partners in various parts of the country. That's part of the way we find deals. The other way is that I actually have a full-time analyst who basically all he does every day is call brokers and underwrite deals. So no, I don't do it myself, but I do it as part of a business approach. And you know, the goal is to find deals, to find things that we can acquire as part of a syndication.
Mm-hmm. You have these partners bring you a deal and say, hey, I've got this apartment. Why don't you go out and raise money for it? And you go raise the money? That's your role?
It can be. I mean, I won't just raise the money. The partners are, sometimes they're boots on the ground. So if I, for example, I have a partner who's actively looking for deals in Dallas. Now, that's an area that I really, really like. It's hard to get a deal in Dallas right now, but it's a place that I really like. So he's the guy who's on the ground and he's looking for deals, and he happens to be a broker and he happens to have a ton of experience in multifamily. And he'll be the guy who, you know, on a day-to-day looking, if he finds a deal, we underwrite it. We look at it together. I go visit the property. If we like it, you know, we get under contract. The next thing you know, we raise money for it. But it, you know, has to go through a process. So there are partners like him. And then there are people like who are employees for me, whose job it is to try to find the right situation for people. And beyond real estate, too, as I mentioned to you offline.
Right. I was going to ask you about this. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as you know, right now, Jason, in multifamily real estate in particular, and I think single family might actually, the yield might be better in single family right now.
I would agree. There's been a lot of yield compression because the yield has compressed in the single family world too. The deals just,
right,
they ain't as good as they used to be.
No, they're not, because, yeah. And the reason for that is, of course, that, you know, all these people are realizing that the institutional money, especially in multifamily,
right,
moved from paper assets to real assets because they didn't know what was happening with the stock market. And so there's been massive cap rate compression. So it's a lot more difficult to find deals. Now, my thing is this, my show, me, everything, I'm not just about real estate. I like real estate. I really, really like it. I understand it. I grew up with it. You know, my dad was an apartment building landlord and, you know, that sort of thing. But I'm sort of agnostic when it comes to the deal. What I want to know is, what is the opportunity? Is it real? Does it cash flow? Do I understand it? So there are other things out there that I'm actively looking into. You know, some of them, even in real estate, it doesn't have to be just buying apartment buildings. As I mentioned, we've got the Hilton in Amber Key in Belize that we're actively raising money for right now. And so that's an opportunity to, you know, own part of the first luxury hotel in the entire country of Belize and the number one island destination in the world. I mean, that'd be like the first Hilton in Honolulu.
That's interesting because that project, that offering, I mean, that's been going on a long time. How much money are you guys raising? I mean, you know, that's been, I've been hearing about that deal for 5 years.
Well, it's because it's a big deal and there's no leverage.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like a nearly close to $300 million project and there's no leverage. And there's no leverage in Belize. So
no bank will loan money on that deal? God, I love leverage.
No, of course, we all love leverage, right? Yeah. But here's the beauty of that. When you invest in it and you get, you're getting your returns, you got to think of that as you're basically getting your cap rate value. We all believe that eventually there will be leverage in Belize. And, just like there is eventually leverage just about anywhere, but that's one of the values of being somewhere where there's no leverage, right? Because what happens when there's leverage? We all know what happens when there's leverage.
Well, prices go up because more money is chasing, not necessarily, because, you know, interestingly, I've looked at deals all over the world. I mean, I've been to 80 countries and I look at real estate everywhere I go, practically, almost, not all completely, but, and interestingly, you know, the leverage initially, yes, if there's only a limited existing supply, it will cause prices to rise. But leverage also creates more development. More developers come in there because they like leverage too, right? And so they build more supply and create more supply, and then the whole area just develops in general.
Yeah, but
that's why Honolulu is so much more developed than Belize, right?
It's true. Although the island is pretty small, so there's not a lot of room for a lot of stuff going on there. You're right. But I think that having a fairly dominant brand early on and without a lot of dominant brand competition, I think does give that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all, you know, I mean, I get all that. Yeah, got you.
Yeah.
Interesting. When do you guys think you'll be done raising money for that? I've been hearing about that deal so long. I was just curious. I didn't know there was no leverage on it. So you got to raise $300 million is what you're saying.
Well, it's between $250, $300 million, something like that. Probably within a year, I think it'll be done. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're just on the last leg here. So parts of the hotel are open already. I mean, we're just developing. I think we're pretty excited about it. So it'll be good.
Cool.
But my point in this is that, you know, there are more things than just multifamily and in general in real estate. I mean, I invest in energy, oil and gas. I invest in, you know, not having anything to do with a syndication of my own.
What kind of deals are you doing there? Like exploration deals or existing wells?
Yeah, things that tend to be tax beneficial. So, for example, not this year, but you know, a couple of years ago when oil was actually decent in price, I had put in
about. Does decent mean a high price or a low price? Because it depends what side of the table you're on.
Yeah, well, it was still not below 50. I think it's around 50, right? It's about 50.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't checked lately. But
here's the thing with the oil and gas. Here's what my whole idea was. I invested in an oil and gas drilling company because it gave me a write-off of almost the entire amount of money that I invested. Right. So I invested about $100,000 and I got a $95,000 write-off in the first year.
$52.25. Go ahead.
What's that?
Oil price.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Per
got
barrel.
It.
Of course.
I thought you were talking about my write-off.
It depends. It depends what type of oil you want. Do you want, you know, light sweet? Do you want Brent? You know, of course, right? But go ahead.
Right. So I invested in it because I got, you know, the huge write-off right up front. I got a huge write-off front. And so for me, that was like a, you know, 40-some% return on investment in the first year. And I've gotten maybe 4 or 5% after that, but I'm fine. There's different reasons for investing too. Some of them are tax related. Some of them are yield related. Some of them are just pure wealth preservation. So I think for my folks who tend to be doctors, lawyers, dentists, software engineers, people like that, there's a slightly different mentality where, you know, these people, a lot of them just don't want to get their hands dirty, you know, Jason. And so
I don't get my hands dirty either on my deals. I mean, I don't even, there are properties that I've owned for 11, 12 years that I've never seen, you know,
I can't get
my hands dirty. There's no way to.
Yeah. I believe it. So anyway, there's many, many different ways to skin a cat, right? And as long as you find some things that work out for you, then great.
I did want to give you a chance because you started to talk about it. I know we talked about it before we started on the life settlements. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's a really unique and little known vehicle. I explained to you that I got ripped off in that, but that just means, you know, I was with a bad person. And, you know, I believe that my responsibility to my listeners and followers is to be somewhat of a laboratory. And so I do some things that I would never recommend anybody else do, just so you know. Like, you know, I invested $25,000 in a fund today. Sometimes I just do it to, because I want to see how they work and what they do, you know, and if I just break even, I'll be happy as a clam, you know, because I learned something. But, you know, I'm not going to recommend this as an investment, okay, you know, to my listeners ever.
Yeah.
So I got ripped off on that life settlement deal. I bought a share in two policies many years ago. Then a few months ago, I was just on a call where a whole bunch of people were on the same call and the lawyer was there trying to get a lawsuit going against the company. The world we live in is so complex. And
it is.
You know, lawyers, God. It's just,
well, give me an investment with zero risk but, and I'll give you zero yield, right? You know, the reality is, and I'll just, you know, your listeners may be wondering what the heck a life settlement is. Yeah. But so let me just explain that. And I'll just say that investing in it is no different, I think, than investing in anything else. You have to do your due diligence. You have to find the right companies. You have to find the right providers and operators, you know. basically what a life settlement is, and it's something that a lot of doctors and dentists actually do invest in, is so you, say you're 85 years old and you've got a $2 million life policy, $2 million death benefit on your whole life insurance policy, and you'd like to see the money now. And your heirs are fine. In fact, they'll sign off on the deal and say that they won't challenge it so that you can get $1 million of that dollars right now. Or, you know, just throwing that out there, 50 cents on a dollar. So there are some companies that will go out and specifically pick policies based on actuarial studies and say, and pool them or buy them away from the elderly person with the assumption that they are going to probably die within the next 5 years. Now, if you depend on one person, of course, and just wait for them to die, that sounds terrible and evil. But if you think of this as a contractual arrangement where the 85-year-old gets, you know, the money now and they don't have to, you know, live with no money until the rest of their life, you can see the positive side of this. But the other value is that it, theoretically, if it's done correctly, that's a contractual arrangement where you are buying money for 50 cents on the dollar. And if you buy into a fund, for example, with several people, the idea being that the average person has 5 years or less, then you're going to see returns, right? So this might not be good for somebody who's 85 years old to buy, right? I mean, you may not want to do it yourself, but if you're young and you have money in your IRA, it might not be a bad way to go, right? Because there are a few guarantees in life. And certainly one is death. Sometimes taxes aren't even a guarantee, but death is.
Yeah, good point. Well, that's the old saying, death and taxes, right? But, right. But you know, I don't know, with all the stuff going on in the world of longevity, maybe even death isn't guaranteed.
Well, we shall that's see. Good. Yeah. So that's the bet, I guess. And yeah. And certainly I think as a physician,
I would count on it for a while longer, so don't worry about
that. Yeah, I was going to tell you the bad news there as a physician is that probably almost everybody who's listening to this podcast is going to die. Maybe not their children, but they will.
Very interesting stuff. So that's an investment. And basically what you do there is you take a share of that policy and you syndicate it. You end up as the syndicator yourself.
And that's not actually a share. The idea is to, you know, actually buy a number of these policies. And then essentially, you know, what you're doing at that point is you have a bunch of investors buying a bunch of policies. Right. And then when you do that, effectively, what you've done is create probably a likelihood of, you know, payoff every few years, you know, just as people naturally, you know, live out the course of their lives. So
right. Interesting stuff. Where can people find you?
My podcast is Wealth Formula Podcast, and that's obviously available on iTunes and Stitcher and at wealthformula.com. And you can get a hold of me there, and I'm happy to talk to anybody about anything they want or take a listen to what I'm doing.
Thank you so much for joining us and happy investing to you.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jason.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.